Welcome to Engineering Influence at the ACEC Fall Conference in Chicago. And we're really pleased to be joined by the Women in Leadership Group. We have a great panel here, starting with Lauren Evans, with Karen Fries, Kathy Ritter, and Elizabeth Stolfus. Kind of starting off with how the Women in Leadership Group came to be and what your major objectives are for members of ACEC who may not be aware of the group.
Well, thanks for having us. So Women in Leadership started, I think, 2 years ago. I'm looking at my colleagues here because time flies. But we were in Orlando, and several of us have been coming to conferences for years and very slowly getting to know each other. And it just kind of dawned on us that it would be really nice if we made that a little bit more formal and really kind of networked and started connecting with others that were here in a little bit more organized fashion to really kind of both advocate for more involvement, more diverse involvement, and just greater networking opportunities. So it's been a great journey of getting to know all these other ladies here and working with them over the last 2 years.
And I know that you have some events coming up during the conference. You have on Tuesday, you have a steering committee meeting, and then a concurrent meeting, which is kind of focused on work-life balance, and then a reception following that for everybody, pretty much open to everyone to come by. With the strategic plan that was approved today, one of the core components of that, of course, is diversity and inclusivity, which is something that is a major focus for ACEC and a major need for the industry at large. Really, for anyone who wants to kind of take the question, where do you see things sit right now in the industry? And what do you think are some short-term and maybe some long-term goals that could kind of move the goalpost towards greater inclusion, greater representation, the word that's been brought up a lot, equity?
Well, I'm not sure we're going to get to equity anytime soon. If equity truly means equal, if we're talking about numbers, I don't think that will happen anytime soon. Women in engineering and environmental fields and STEM fields at all, frankly, have been not as much on the rise as we would have liked for them to be, but specific to this organization, to be honest, I don't believe this organization has been as diverse as even other engineering organizations, and it was time that we made that statement. And our big goal is to make sure that when women reach out to this organization, that they see other people that look like them, and that they are at ease in coming to the conferences and in going to the seminars and applying for leadership roles. And so our intent is to provide opportunities for seminars and receptions and networking so that they will feel at ease as we continue this.
Yeah, and just to piggyback onto that, I think we also have been talking a lot about us needing to be more proactive. You know, we do have a lot of our state organizations that have more diversity than you might recognize at the national level. And so those of us who have been to national events and have served roles here have been talking about how we kind of need to reach down into those organizations and encourage those women to come to the national event and explain to them the value that we've found here and how it can translate into helping their careers.
And how has it been received so far from membership?
I think the response has been really positive, actually. I've been really overwhelmed by the number of people that I have had conversations with that I wouldn't have before. And really, it's interesting to see how similar people's experiences are and how much warmer of an environment it feels like having the opportunity to talk together and to, you know, gain education over topics that are critically important to our businesses in a place that's very inviting.
We had Chandra Storrison on a couple of months, I guess maybe it was like 2 months ago, and talking about the virtue and value, especially from the bottom line, when talking about the management of engineering firms and the importance of diversity and getting a more diverse employee base, not just for, I guess, the social value, which is self-evident, but also for kind of the dollars and cents area, where a greater diversity of a team that's pitching business or is managing a firm generally has greater revenue in terms of innovation, and just in general, the revenue of those firms is higher than those that aren't diverse. That I think is a very interesting statistic, and it's something which isn't really talked about as much. Is there anything that you want to put kind of more context on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it very well, but it's true that our industry is not as diverse as we would like it to be, but our clients sure are. And it's really nice when we reflect them. And then when you bring a diverse perspective to a team, you just more naturally end up with a better thought out product.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the value really comes.
And have you noticed going for business and kind of talking to, especially in the private sector, clients that, you know, there's an expectation, you know, that there is a diverse team pitching the business or will be doing the work for that client? Is it kind of, has the boardroom changed over time on the client side?
That's a difficult question for me to answer. I work mostly in the public sector. I do think that women in particular are more evident in the public sector. That I think women tend to gravitate to the public sector because it's an easier place to work, because the benefits are defined and the hours are defined and all of that sort of thing. So I think women find it an easier place to work. So from the client side, yes, maybe there are more women that come to those meetings and come to those proposal meetings. I can't speak to the private side because I don't do much work there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious because it's something which Chandra brought up. Now, I know that the concurrent session is going to be on work-life balance. Industry-wide, you know, where does that sit? What are the biggest challenges related to work-life balance and women engaged in really just the consulting engineering industry?
It's funny because I'll probably talk about this from a business owner's point of view with work-life balance. And I think we all struggle with that concept of, you know, how do you do that and still have a successful company? Because what we have found with some of our younger employees is they think work-life balance means that it's in balance every day, instead of kind of over the long term it averages out to be in balance. So that's something I was hoping to hear on Tuesday, is what is a realistic expectation for what that is and still have a successful career? Because I think the notion of what that is definitely changed from when I started out in the business.
Which is an interesting point, because another one of the statistics that I always go back to is that they talk about the fact that by 2025, about 75% of the employee base is going to be millennial. And, you know, you raise a good point to say that there's the generational switch to an extent, that the expectations of the workplace are changing with the younger generation of workers. What's been your experiences with that? I mean, have you had have you noticed a shift in what people expect from their work life?
I really have. It seems that some of my younger employees have a different perspective on what it means to be on, and they might be on at 2 a.m. and then off at 10 a.m., and that's really different than the world that I grew up in. But I have also found that I think that there's a real opportunity for people in my generation to offer tools and experiences to people in the next generation that will expand the great skill sets that they already have in ways that they wouldn't have expected. And really, it's a great time for us to work together on understanding each other better, and both of us having those learning opportunities that maybe 5 years ago I wasn't really ready for.
And I think the shift, one of the great things, when I started my company, it was over 25 years ago, and we had working moms working from us from the very beginning who were part-time and, you know, needed a lot of flexibility. And I remember some fellow CEOs is like, how can you do that? And my response was, how can I not? Because they're great employees to have. You know, they bring value to the company. And I think that that has become much more mainstream to allow that sort of thing. So that's been a great change in the industry.
Have you, in your own work experience, take advantage of any kind of novel new forms of technology or remote working that's allowed you to offer the potential for maybe a little bit equal, of a better work-life balance for, you know, working mothers or for, you know, people who are looking for a little bit more flexibility?
In my office, we try to make it really easy for people to be able to work remotely. And sometimes remotely means at the job site, but other times remotely means at home after the kids went to bed or, you know, after you've gone to parent-teacher conferences or the school play. And I have found that to be extraordinarily valuable because the parents in my office don't feel torn between the school play and the project deadline. They feel like they can have both. And while it's completely inconvenient, I think that it works really well for everyone. And for those folks who aren't parents, they have other activities that they're interested in. If they want to be in an ultimate Frisbee competition over the weekend, they can figure out a way to be able to complete their project assignments at the same time as traveling to wherever they might be having that competition.
I would just actually, that's exactly the same answer I would give. I think it really just is about allowing people to be a lot more flexible with their schedules as long as they still meet the deadlines. And you're right, technology has changed so much that it's really allowed that to happen, whereas it didn't before.
And not just with their schedules, I mean, where they want to live too. You know, we're a relatively small firm, but we've had an employee who for the last 10 years has either lived in Peru or England and has continued to work for us from those locations, even though we don't have international projects. And it's been great to keep him on the staff.
What do you hope that ACEC does in the next month, a couple of months, as it works through the plan, to really hammer home that goal of broadening diversity and inclusivity?
You know, I will say that, first of all, to actually have the diversity and inclusion goal in the plan and have it so clearly delineated, and it's not just one aspect of it. It's to have diverse leadership within ACEC, which is so desperately needed, and to have more diverse membership, and then to also have a more diverse engagement of membership. So there's so many different points that I think we have clearly identified that I hope as we move forward, we really address each one of those a little bit deeper and they don't get lost in the white noise. And so that's what I'm hoping, is that what we spent so much time putting together will stay intact.
And one of the things that I hope, they did such a great job in developing the plan at reaching out and getting input from so many different sectors, that I hope they continue that in the fleshing out of things on how to get a lot of voices involved and what that should look like.
And I think going forward, the organization as a whole needs to reach out to the MOs and to the other pieces of the organization to make all of this diversity work. This group of folks that you're talking to today has long since recognized the need for more diversity. But what we also knew was that the piece that we could impact was the women in leadership. And so that's what we spoke up and said, you know, as you're going forward with diversity, we'll be your sounding board for the women piece of it. And as it so happens, there are a number of MOs that are way ahead of the national organization. And so we're trying to learn from those MOs. There are also a number of MOs that are even further behind than the national organization. And we hope somehow all of that can come together, and that having this group, which we've termed Women in Leadership, will be an avenue that even the MOs could turn to and learn some things from.
Wonderful. All right, so it's my understanding that really the group together online has a presence of about 40 to 50 people who are engaged. Perfect opportunity here at the fall conference to really increase that engagement. What would your call to action be to anyone listening to get more engaged with the Women in Leadership group?
Yeah, so first of all, I'll start by saying we're really excited to have the 40 or 50 we have so far, and we see that continuing to grow. And the next event that we have, we actually have the educational session on Tuesday morning, sponsored by Women in Leadership, And then Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock, we have our first reception, which we're really excited about. So if you're here at the fall conference, we really hope you attend. And then past that, if you're not here in Chicago, we hope you reach out to ACEC National and just get information on how to get on the mailing list. It's going to continue to grow, and your involvement will be essential in defining who we become.
Great. Well, I really thank you for taking the time. I know it's the first full day of the conference, and it's always busy. So I really do appreciate you taking the time. And again, the Women in Leadership Group, a fantastic group of people who are working to transform ACEC to really fit a modern engineering workforce, and really appreciate their work and continued success. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.